Welcome to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes,
a uniquely Pacific Northwest podcast.
I'm Shay.
And I'm Jody.
And on each episode, we take you on a journey through the weird, wacky, and wonderful stories of Pacific Northwest history.
So grab your North Face jacket, strap on your Tevas, pour yourself a cup of Northwest roasted coffee, and
let's fall down the rabbit hole.
Look at us. We're perfectly
in sync.
In sync.
Sing, just like Justin Timberlake and all his friends. In the annals of Seattle history, the year 1900 stands as a testament to both progress and corruption. At the heart of this narrative lies the figure of Edgar Ray Butterworth, whose name became synonymous with scandal and exploitation. Amidst his burgeoning growth and development of the city, Butterworth orchestrated a series of illicit activities, including land grabs and asset theft, that rocked the foundations of Seattle society. He also transformed the funeral industry into what we see it as today. But first, before we really get into this story, I want to stop and take a second to talk about a really great experience you and I had recently.
Yeah, so this last weekend, Jody and I dragged our husbands to yet another tour by Pretty Gritty Tours in Tacoma. This one was of Stadium High School, a castle perched atop a hill overlooking Commencement Bay in Tacoma, Washington. This grand structure is right out of Harry Potter, you guys. It is a castle. It has turrets, soaring spires, French brick, you name it. It's incredible. Oh. And it even has ghosts.
Yes. Elevator ghosts.
Elevator
attic ghosts. Basement ghosts.
Weird clone ghosts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was a creepy story. We will let Chris tell you the story on one of his tours. But a very disturbing paranormal experience happened to Chris when he first started giving tours of the school. So Chris, who is the founder of the company Pretty Gritty Tours, he was a travel journalist for 10 years. Did you know that?
No, that sounds really exciting.
I know, that's awesome.
I'm jealous.
I know. No wonder he's so good at this.
Yeah.
So he led us through the school from basement to attic and regaled us with stories from the building's past. He's an excellent tour guide. He's engaging and funny.
And the other thing was, that school, and I hope somebody at Stadium High School hears this, was just so well kept. Even peeking into the classrooms, I mean, they're in school Monday through Friday with students, and they're tidy. I mean, I saw in one classroom there was a bin of colored pencils, and they were separated by color, and they weren't mixed up. Like, I mean, we're at the end of the year. We're still staying tidy and organized, and
wow.
The classrooms are great, and I just, the whole place is just so well kept that the building is insane to me.
Yeah, it's
as a high school.
One of my dreams was to tour this building. So we will probably talk about Stadium High School on an upcoming episode. Or if you want to hear more about it, you go take a tour with Pretty Gritty Tours. Mm-hmm. They do not only tours of Tacoma, but Olympia, and soon they're going to be in the Tri-Cities in central Washington. And you can go on ghost tours, brewery tours, coffee tours, sweets tours, even kayak tours. Yeah, we're going to have to do one of those this summer.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to see us again, Chris. Sorry. I don't know if he wants to see us back at the tours because I feel like we were acting a little bit like children as we would run off to explore corridors on our own. We were kind of terrible.
He gave explicit instructions later. Do not leave the red line.
I think that was, he was not looking directly at us, but I think he was speaking directly to us. Do not go off the red line. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest or plan to visit, we highly recommend you take a tour. You can get 10% off your booking by going to our website, and you can find the discount code at the top of our page. You just have to enter your email and you will get that discount code for 10% off. Then you go to prettygrittytours.com to book a tour. They give detailed historical information about every place you visit, and you will definitely be entertained and educated.
Yes, it's a well-recommended experience.
All right. Tell me about a mortuary.
A mortuary. I'm going to tell you all about Edgar Ray Butterworth. He was born into a family of modest means and possessed a keen intellect and insatiable appetite for wealth and power. Armed with charm and cunning, he quickly ascended the social ladder, establishing himself as a prominent figure in Seattle's business and political circles. However, beneath this facade of respectability lurked a man consumed by greed and ambition. And this man was ambitious. He seems to have lived several lives before he even arrived in Seattle. And once he got to Seattle, he lived a few more lives.
Did you say he was from Michigan originally?
Massachusetts.
Oh, Massachusetts. I get my M states mixed up. You know me in geography.
Well, we're not a good pair when it comes to that. I can't believe we go on road trips alone, just two of us. Yeah. So born in Massachusetts in 1847, Butterworth received a limited education. Despite that, at the age of 16, he started to study for the bar exam. And at the age of 21, he was admitted into the Massachusetts State Bar. Interesting fact, in 1861, he married Grace Whipple. And Grace's father, William Whipple, was a signer of the Declaration of Independence.
No way.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oh, that's nuts.
But she died 2 years into their marriage after giving birth to one son, Gilbert. And I'm not sure what happens to his law career after that, but Butterworth goes on and he moves after his wife's death to Missouri and becomes a hatter, which he had done earlier, previous in his early teens.
Like a haberdasher?
He made hats, helped people.
Oh, yeah, that's a haberdasher.
Yes, yes.
So he had a haberdashery.
Yes.
Say it with me. Haberdashery.
Haberdashery. He did that as a young teen and then went back to it after being a lawyer.
That do you know that back in the day, the term mad as a hatter? That is because in forming the hats, they used chemicals that would drive you mad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe that's what happens.
Very toxic. Okay.
And he eventually marries a woman named Maria, and they go on to have four more boys. So he ends up with five sons. They move from Missouri to Kansas, where now he becomes a cattleman. He's running cattle for ranchers. And while he's doing that, he also starts to collect bison bones. And while he's transporting cattle and he gets to any railroad, he will sell these bones for $10 a ton. So he's working two jobs. He's running cattle, which has nothing to do with being a lawyer or a hatter.
I know. I'm just like sitting here. This man's career.
Right. This is the beginning of that's why I say he's lived many lives before he even gets to Seattle.
I wonder how many bones you have to collect to get a
ton.
A ton. I want to know what the logistics of this.
Right. He's got horses and wagons. These horses are tugging this stuff along.
Yeah. And I wonder if he has like people helping him.
Yeah. That's what I was picturing. Okay. It's probably I would think in a group, right? A bunch of cowboys.
Yeah. Maybe. And they all just like pick up bones while they're out in the
range.
And then
he sells them for $10 a ton. He's just always finding opportunity for profit. And it is during this time as a cattleman that Butterworth has an experience that will later shape his legacy that he is now known for to this day in Seattle. He came across a dugout home where he found a settler whose wife and newborn baby had just passed away. Mm-hmm. I imagine during childbirth, since there was a wife and newborn that deceased newly. But they're in the grasslands of the country, there's no trees. So there's no lumber to fashion a coffin out of. So Butterworth takes his wagon box and takes panels off of it and makes his first coffin. In 1881, Butterworth and his wife make their way to Chehalis, Washington. So again, they're on the move and they plan to raise cattle there, their own cattle rather than running cattle. Once they arrive in Chehalis, though, they realize that west of the Cascade Mountain Range, that's not really a great place to raise cattle. So he pivoted again, and he built the first steam-powered flour mill west of the Cascades.
Oh my God.
And so he ran a flour mill for about 3 years. But because Butterworth seems to have little ability to sit still, he and Maria moved to Centerville, which is now known as Centralia.
Oh.
And they opened a furniture business. Centralia, yes, another venture for him. Centralia is where Butterworth started to see the value in politics in his business. And he became mayor and eventually made his way up to the state legislature, all while still running his furniture business. In the late 1880s, the area experienced an epidemic of black diphtheria. And Butterworth was asked by the state, of course, he was in the legislature, but he was asked by the state to start making coffins because they had so many deceased bodies they needed to manage. So he started making coffins out of his furniture store. At the time, coffins were made at the time of need within the day, but he started stocking ready-made coffins and storing them in Olympia. In 1892, Butterworth moves his family and business to Seattle. He purchased Cross & Company Undertakers and renamed it E.R. Butterworth & Sons, as he now has five sons to join him in his business venture.
So have we kept count of how many different jobs this is?
Right. He was a hatter as a kid, a lawyer.
He was a lawyer.
Hatter. Cattleman. Bone collector. Then cattle rancher for a minute.
Cattle rancher, flour mill.
And
furniture, politician, and then coffin maker.
And now coffin maker.
So is that, did I just count 10 different, I mean, I guess we could make it 9 if you say hatter is, we don't need to see hatter twice. So I think that's 9 different jobs he's had.
Incredible. And he's in his 40s now when he gets into Seattle. So he's done all of this in his 40s, right, by the time he's in his mid-40s.
That's crazy.
So once he gets to Seattle, E.R. Butterworth & Sons transformed the funeral industry. They were the first to offer silk-lined coffins made of wood other than pine, simple boxes. They created the idea of having hearses to transport the coffin, and they were the first to embalm the deceased. So they did all these trial and error, and the modern form of embalming was really created by Butterworth & Sons.
Oh, that's nuts. So he's the one who turned this into an actual business.
It's an actual industry.
Industry, right.
He actually coined the terms mortician and mortuary. Those words didn't exist before him. He created the industry and the words that describe it.
Oh my God, this is bonkers. Right? Blowing my mind right now.
Right? Just one little guy from Massachusetts. And so now this is where the story seems to take a turn from American dreamer to local schemer. But we're going to take a break.
During the last few weeks, I've been busy making new podcast friends, and I want to share some of their great podcasts with you. Our pod friend of the week is the Total Conundrum podcast, hosted by Tracy and Jeremy. On their show, they deep dive into the darker side of true crime, the supernatural, and the unexplained. If you dig the twisted, admire the outlandish, and are enamored by the unusual, then you will love Total Conundrum. Take a listen.
In a world where true crime meets the supernatural and the unexplained.
Where true crime and chills go hand in hand.
Welcome to Total Conundrum, the podcast that explores the dark, the eerie, and the downright mysterious.
Join us as we embark on a spine-tingling journey through the mysteries that keep you up at night.
We're diving deep into true crime stories, uncovering the most baffling cases, and exploring the twisted minds behind them.
But we don't stop there. We're also exploring the paranormal, from haunted houses to cryptids and all the creepy things that go bump in the night. Get ready for some supernatural thrills.
And what sets us apart? Prepare for a dose of dark humor as we navigate through the creepy and bizarre.
We've got it all. Bone-chilling tales, banter, and mind-boggling conundrums. You won't know whether to scream or laugh.
So grab your favorite snack, turn down the lights, and join us for a roller coaster ride of true crime and the supernatural, sprinkled with a bit of comic banter.
Stay curious, stay captivated, and let's dive into the world of Total Conundrum.
Now available on your favorite podcast platform. Get ready to be captivated, creeped out, and cracked up with Total Conundrum.
I can't wait to listen to that podcast. Back to Butterworth. Butterworth had found many successes as he traveled through the country on his way to Washington, creating opportunities in each location as he traveled. And he positioned himself in powerful places, i.e. the government. And it seems that success and power only inspired the need for more. His ventures from here are racked with scandal. He doesn't seem to have any reports of scandal prior to getting to Seattle. But once he gets to Seattle, I think the addiction to the power became more than he could take and stay on the right side of the law.
So what you're...
Or the right side of morals, because sometimes he's doing things that are within the law and they end up having to change the law.
Oh, because they're like, yeah, this is probably not good. Yeah. So what year was this that he moved to Seattle and started doing the mortuary business?
It was 1892.
Okay. Well, you know, it's pretty well known that at that time in Seattle, there was a lot of corruption, right?
Yes,
there
very
was
much.
A lot of corruption. There was a lot of people doing shady things.
Right.
So he probably just fell into what was already happening.
Well, he seemed to be an opportunist at every turn. So maybe he just took the opportunity to do what everybody else was doing and be really good at it.
Yeah, he's like, this place is great. I can like just make money hand over fist, lie, cheat, and steal, and it's fine. Nobody's going to do anything about it.
It's within the rules of the norm. So,
exactly.
I mean, I can
yeah.
just keep doing it. And so that's what he does, really. One of Butterworth's most notorious schemes involved the manipulation of land transactions, exploiting legal loopholes, so this is where they end up having to change the law later, and leveraging connections to seize valuable parcels of property. Through a web of deceit and coercion, he orchestrated a series of fraudulent land deals, displacing unsuspecting landowners and lining his own pockets with ill-gotten gains.
Jeez.
During the Spanish flu pandemic in 1919, businesses were closed. Much like COVID-19, the Spanish flu shut down businesses, so people weren't making money in their business, and those folks that were working for those businesses are now not making money, and there were no stimulus checks back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So Butterworth loaned people money so they could, you know, get through the month, small amounts of money, but when they couldn't pay it back, it was within the law, this is the loophole, where he could just seize all of their assets.
Oh my God.
So they may owe him $100 and he's taking thousands of dollars of land. And so he ends up seizing lots of land doing this. Entire neighborhoods were reshaped at his behest as Butterworth sought to consolidate his control over vast swatches of real estate. So he was acquiring tons of land in the area. Think about that to this day. That's prime land.
Yeah. So this is all like the downtown Seattle area.
Yep, downtown Seattle.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But land was not the only commodity coveted by Butterworth. He also had a penchant for stealing assets from unsuspecting investors and business partners. Operating under the guise of legitimate enterprises, he siphoned funds from various ventures, leaving a trail of financial ruin in his wake. He would invest in companies, gain access to their finances, take it all, and close them down.
Oh, geez.
With fraudulent transactions, Butterworth grew bolder, exploiting the trust of those who dared to cross his path. Butterworth made quote unquote friendly connections with politicians and police in order to keep his game going.
Meaning bribes.
Bribes. Yep. Police were well known to protect Butterworth, not only to look the other way, but also to make sure folks around town were aware that they would be receiving no backing from police when it came to doing business with Butterworth. It became known throughout the city that if you had an issue with Mr. Butterworth and how he was handling business, it was best to just keep your mouth shut and take your losses. You would not win, and you would find it difficult to do business in Seattle moving forward. Even the mayor was in the pocket. During this time in Seattle, it was a rough town. It was the Yukon Gold Rush, and the streets were dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of crime in the streets and dead bodies to be picked up. So the city had to pay the undertakers in the area. They would pay them $50 a body.
That's a lot of money back then.
Right? $50 from the city.
Yeah.
But of course, Butterworth and Sons were the priority call over all other undertakers. So they were getting most of the $50 body pickups.
What year? So this was like the 1920s at this point?
You know, it might be this portion of my story after he gets to Seattle. It seems like they kind of run concurrent. He's running a lot of these scams all at the same time. So I'm not sure what year it is exactly after he gets there. Rumors abound that E.R. Butterfield.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to fuck you up with that one again.
So funny. When I was reading, I'm like, wait, where did Butterfield?
Who's Butterfield? Is it Butterfinger by the time you get to the end of the script?
I should have left it. Okay, so back to rumors abound that E.R. Butterworth and Sons convinced people to bury their loved ones with valuables. They would then put those valuables in the coffin of the deceased and keep them for themselves.
They're like, Aunt Maud really would love to be buried with her favorite pair of pearl earrings.
Yes, that's important to them. Let them go to the grave with that.
Yes. And then
you should send your loved ones off with some belongings that are important to them, especially the valuable ones.
I wonder if that was a practice. I mean, the funeral practices throughout history a lot of times have included burying people with their prized possessions, right? But I wonder if in America at that time, before him, if that was a practice, because you would think, like, especially when times are tough, like, maybe you can sell those earrings to help feed your family instead of burying them with them. And then maybe I'm wondering if he is responsible for that, because I know a lot of times when people bury people now, they will bury them with those those sort of items.
And I think he may be one of the responsible parties, because up until this time, you were just simply in your clothes in a pine box.
Right.
And buried. That was it.
Right.
And so
I wonder if he also did the, you know, the photographs people would sometimes do of their deceased people, sit like they would sit prop them up. And, I can't remember what that's called, but it's a very, very
weird,
morbid practice. I mean, I understood why they did it, because a lot of times they had no pictures of their deceased.
Right. This is how they got one right before.
Yeah. I wonder if he also offered those services.
Oh, I bet. I didn't see that anywhere at all, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Right.
But the other practices that he was doing. And newspapers at the time, there was no, I didn't find any criminal cases against him or complaints against him at all about this. That's why I say it's rumored they were doing this. But there was some reports in the newspaper at the time, which were really a lot more like gossip rags. Like, you know, Mr. Smith went over to Mr. Barber's house and they had lunch that day and they discussed these things. And you're like, is this a news article? Anyway, so there were a couple articles where I wanted my mother buried with this item. There was one article. I wanted my mother buried with this item, yet I'm seeing somebody walking around town wearing it. Right.
It's like Linda Hazard wearing...
Yes.
Was that Clara's...
Yes.
...dress?
Yes. In fact, she's coming right up.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Coming right up. We'll be revisiting her. So if you saw a piece of jewelry that your loved one was supposed to be buried with walking around town on another human being, you had no avenue for reporting it or retrieving it. There was no way to prove these accusations because there was never an investigation. There was nobody monitoring Mr. Butterworth.
Right. And there was no inventory of what the deceased came in with that you could refer back to, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it was your word against his, and he's a
absolutely
prominent businessman, and you're Joe Blow nobody.
And anybody who would be tasked with even looking into that was not doing it.
Yeah, because they're all on off the take. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So your stuff just went poof.
Wow. I talked about corruption in politics last week, too.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Here
right
we are.
Here again.
Well, in these 1800s, late 1800s and early 1900s, I feel like it was just, that was just the culture.
Yeah, that's just the way
everyone
did
corrupt
business. Yeah,
maybe out here at the West. Maybe not on the East Coast.
I'm sure it was
a little
was
more
out there
settled
too.
It was Wild West out here.
Exactly.
So if you refer back to our episode on April 17th, where we talk about Linda Hazard and Starvation Heights, we actually mention E.R. Butterworth because she takes her patients as some of her patients that she doesn't just throw off a cliff. When she actually wants to have them, take them to a mortuary, she takes them to E.R. Butterworth and Sons, and they have an agreement there where she shares in whatever assets she's able to glean from these patients that are now dead. She shares with him and they cremate the body or...
So he's helping in the cover-up.
He's helping in the cover-up.
But hold on. I got to back you up real quick. In our episode, you did not mention her throwing bodies off of cliffs. Did do that?
Yes. That she would just throw bodies off cliffs. Yes. I didn't mention that?
No.
I swear I thought I did. Yeah. A lot of people just went missing forever. And her staff had reported that she just tossed people off cliffs.
Oh, my God.
If they weren't people that were being looked for, they did not go to E.R. Butterworth.
Oh, my gosh.
So when she had to take them somewhere because somebody would be looking for them, this is where she took them. And then they would share in the assets, which, remember, if you go back to our episode from April 17th and listen to it, it talks about how she convinced people to give power of attorney and all their assets turned over to her once if they were to die. And then she would share them with him as long as he participated in the cover up. And this is how she eventually gets caught, is she takes Claire Williamson there, where E.R. Butterworth swaps out the body. He cremates Claire and puts a different body in a casket. And the nanny Margaret comes in to view the body.
Right.
this was because they didn't want her to see an emaciated body.
Right, and see the shape that Clara was in, yeah.
And because the embalming process was so new, they told Margaret, when she said, this doesn't look like Claire, they said, well, that's because she's embalmed. It makes them look different. That's how they got away with it. But yeah, go back to that episode if you want to hear more. So today you will find Butterworth Funeral Home in Seattle still, but it's not actually run by the Butterworth family. And it's run out of Arthur A. Wright Chapel and Queen Anne Columbarium. But again, not actually a Butterworth family run business.
It just has the name.
Just has the name. And so what is this? 125 years later? Mm-hmm. No, 120
some odd.
Some odd, maybe more years later. We still have Butterworth family in the funeral services in Seattle. And you can still see some of E.R. Butterworth and Sons locations to this day, even though they're not run as mortuaries anymore. One of the locations is Kell's, an Irish restaurant down in Pike Place.
Been there many times.
Yes, it's actually really cool. Good food. And they have music on the weekends or in the evenings. Also, going back to one of our episodes, I want to refer to the one on February 14th, Love for Sale, Seattle's Most Misrepresented Madam, when we talk about Lou Graham and some of the Speedle tours that we included in that. I've taken one of their tours, their ghost tour, and they include Kell's restaurant, and they talk about hauntings that happen or reported. People honestly won't be in the building alone at night.
Really?
Yep. There's at least, when I took the tour years ago, below the restaurant was still empty and they would hear things moving down there all the time. And
oh, creepy.
Yeah. So definitely part of the ghost tour because it is reportedly very haunted.
Ooh.
So other than Kell's, there's a couple more places that he operated his mortuary in. One was the Bon Marché store.
No way. Yeah, which is now Macy's,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the Bon Marché. Do you remember their jingle when they'd have a sale?
What was it?
Day-o.
Oh, yeah.
One day sale. One day only at the Bon Marché.
We just did a commercial for a company that doesn't exist. Look at us.
I loved the Bon Marché. It was like fancy.
And then he was able to move his mortuary to the Butterworth block. So he has acquired so many other people's land that now he can do a whole block worth of his.
I want my own block.
And it was in 1921 when he moved down to Pike Place, which is now Kell's. And that building is actually on the National Register of Historic Places. Oh, wow. The Butterworth block, or what is known now as the Butterworth building, was the city's first custom-built modern mortuary. And that is still able to be seen in downtown Seattle to this day.
And wasn't there another place up on Capitol Hill?
Yes, it's called the Pine Box. It's a local bar.
Yes, I've taught my Pilates and Pines class in that bar.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, it's really
cool.
Did
it smell?
Well, it smelled like beer and sweaty bodies by the time we were done. But they do have...
No formaldehyde.
No formaldehyde. So they do have the original, because it was a... They had, you know, it was a funeral home. And so they had a chapel inside of there where they would do services. And the original pipe organ is still there. The original choir loft is still there. And apparently the bar and most of the tables are actually made out of the coffin cabinets that were downstairs in the processing area. Isn't
that would be insane.
Crazy? Yeah, we should do a field trip and go to Kell's and there.
Oh, I love Kell's. I'll definitely go to both of those places.
And then maybe we can go up to the Arthur Wright one, because I bet it has a great view.
Yes, and it's a beautiful building.
Yeah, we should do that. And then we should go to the Scientology building in Queen Anne as well. Should we join Scientology?
I would not do that. You can't get out.
No.
You can't change your mind. Once you're in, you're out. In, or they'll stalk you.
I know. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Back to Butterworth.
Well,
that is
the sum of the story right there. Did I tell you? Wait. Going back to the loophole where he was taking all the assets.
Okay. Yeah.
The United States government sued him, and then the law was changed where no longer could you use a loophole to just take all the assets. You had to take what you were owed.
Okay.
So if that was a horse to pay your $100 or whatever it was in value, that's what you took.
Okay.
You could no longer just take it all because they owed you money.
Jeez. Nice job, Butterfield.
Yeah, I think it was 1926 that he was sued by the United States government.
They're like, thanks, Butternut Crunch.
Right. By this time, he's acquired lots of land.
So whatever happened to him?
He passes away 1921. So from 1947 to 21, he's an old guy back in the day.
Oh, from 1847?
Yeah, 1847 to 1921.
Yeah. 21. And then did his
son? Yeah, so he's in his 70s.
Okay.
Yes, and his sons are actually still in the area. They do interviews. Not sons, I'm sorry. Grandsons, great-grandsons. Okay. He has a great-great-grandson that's 37 years old at the time of an article that I read in the early 2000s. So he's got a great-great-grandson in his 40s.
Do you know if any of them are in the mortuary business?
They are not in the mortuary business as far as Butterworth and Sons goes. Okay. If any are, I have not seen that.
That was interesting. That was really fascinating. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, it is fascinating that, once again, Seattle is the launching pad for an industry. We've got Amazon, we've got Microsoft, we've got Boeing, right. And we have Butterworth.
Butterworth.
Cremations.
Not to be confused with the delicious pancake syrup.
Yeah, because I think that's
Mrs. Buttersworth. Buttersworth, yeah.
Yes. During this story, I've called him Buttersworth, Butterworth, Butterfield.
Butterfinger.
Get it together. That's actually what he should be called. Butterfinger.
Because he's got greasy fingers that go in everything.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, that was E.R. Butterworth.
Thank you for that story.
No, that wasn't. That was E.R. Butterworth.
Thank you for that story. All right, guys. Well, we appreciate your support. Thank you so much for listening. Please, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to the podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if wherever you're listening allows you to rate or review the show, can you please give us a 5-star rating and maybe a review on Apple Podcasts? You can actually write in a review. We really love hearing from you. You can always reach out through social media. So look for Rainy Day Rabbit Holes Podcasts wherever you get social media. We are on Facebook a lot. We are on Instagram and also on Threads. You can always email me at shea@rainydayrabbitholes.com and visit our website at rainydayrabbitholes.com. And that's where you can get your discount code for Pretty Gritty Tours. You can find more information about the episodes. You can find our sources sometimes. It's when I remember to put them in. And you can also find a link to join our Patreon. So with the Patreon, your monthly support will, first off, let us pay back all of the podcast debt we now have.
Yes, yes.
And then help us.
We're currently a nonprofit business.
Right? Yes, and we make no profit. We are backwards. It'll help us with that. And then it'll help us to pay for the continuing costs of running the show. And you will get excellent bonus content. There's several different tiers where you get more goodies the higher up in the tier you get. So you can find that on our website at rainydayrabbitholes.com. And we also wanted to let you guys know that for the summer, we are going to go down to releasing an episode every other week. So that's way we can enjoy the summer with our families. And we can also spend a little bit more time writing up each episode so that we can give you better episodes. I'm hoping we can go from half-assed research to whole-assed research. That's the plan.
Whole-assed research.
Whole-assed research. That's our promise to you.
And share, share, share. Share with everyone you know.
Yes, please send your friends and family links to the show. You can name your firstborn child Rainy Day Rabbit Holes podcast. That's a good way to spread the love about the show. You could tattoo it on your forehead. That also works.
Yeah, we'll send you a t-shirt if you do that.
Yeah. Or even if you tattoo it where the sun doesn't shine, like maybe your butt cheek.
Well, you got to show it to people, though.
You do. You have to drop your trousers and show them.
So the sun's going to shine on it sometimes.
And also, we are going to start introducing some new fun guests to the show. And we will be on other shows, and you're going to see my brother come back again. He's going to present us with some sunny day rabbit holes, some tales from Southwest history. So just keep tuned. Make sure that you are subscribed on Spotify so that you never miss an episode. All right, we will see you next time, guys. Thanks again, Jody, for this great story. And
see you down the rabbit hole.
See, we're perfect. I know.
So grab your North Face jacket, strap on.
It's like a strap-on, but...
Yeah. I'm confusing my Tevas and my sex toys. Okay, so...
One day only at the Bon Marché.
Save 20, 30, 40%.
One day only at the Bon
Marché. I know the savings are great in every department.
One day only at the Bon Marché.
Sale.
One day sale.
Saturday only at the Bon Marché.